All right, with me on the line right now is Dan John. And to give people a heads up, as we come into the big episode 250, I am going back into the, really the extensive catalog of guests that I've had on the show in these last 6+ years. And number one on my list to get on was Dan John. So thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're responsible for my career, as I remember.
Oh yeah, well, I think that's something that I at least get emailed about maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, people talking, or at least they even find like the fitcast.com from the YouTube video of you talking about Olympic lifting and squatting in 2006 back in Los Angeles.
Ah, that's amazing.
And that's literally when this kind of all started. It was about 6 years ago, too. It was about 6 years, ago from this time period.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Ah, that's stunning, yeah. Okay, well, great.
I will make sure I have not sent your residual check for the free video since we posted it online for free. But, I think people have, seriously, I think that's one of the coolest, surprises, was being able to see that. Even before it was on YouTube, we had over 150,000 views on Google Video before Google killed that. And now it's up on YouTube, and I was able to go back and clean up the video for it a little bit to make it look a little bit better. So people are checking it out. All new people now are checking out and learning some awesome stuff from you.
Kevin, for those who are coming late to the party here, somebody asked me at the LA Test Fest, would I go over the Olympic lifts and squatting? And what I see, I had a broom and a chair. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'm exaggerating, am I?
No, that was pretty much that. Yeah, that's pretty accurate in a group of about 30 people.
And I've had people. I mean, and it's funny. No, it was more than that. It was about 7,000 because I keep getting emails from people. It's like an event that happened. There was only 300 people, but 30 years later there was 10,000.
Yeah.
That was a nice little event. It's funny because I looked at it not long ago, and even though I think I would tweak a few things, I really wouldn't change that much.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me actually happy to see it, because I think in the 6 years, I think I've had some, to be honest, I've added some regression, some extra steps, in case someone just, say a 60-year-old needs to do, squatting movements and stuff. But really, it holds up. It really does hold up. That's nice. It's kind of amazing, too, because of the technology of the internet, we can do this. And so what a gift.
Oh, yeah, and you were gracious enough to, one of the things that I have been kind of going back is I've been trying to do these interviews as even a way to say thank you to you and to the people that were kind of willing to just let some kid turn on a video camera or talk to him on Skype randomly and again it was a very cool thing. And people out there, you can go on YouTube, just type in Dan John squat, it's one of the first things that pops up, and people are still checking it out often.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm glad. As I always tell people, I think I need to give back a lot to the community. I mean, Dick Knottmeyer, Ralph Mon, Bob Luhati, my folks, my brothers, all the time and energy people poured into my athletic career. I just feel I need to give back. I mean, I'm not trying to be all misty-eyed or anything, but I do. I feel I have a huge debt. I mean, remember, all my degrees, and I have – it's funny. When you get an email from me, I don't have a comma and then any initials. I mean, I have lots and lots and lots of advanced degrees, and I'm not a dummy, but I owe it all to the discus. I mean, my entire education cost $10, because they couldn't waive the health fee. And, here I am sitting 55 years old. I'm basically retired for 2 years. Certainly, well, my wife always says I'm the busiest retired man in the world. And it's all because of, guys like yourself, Kevin, You got me in the weight room. You taught me some things correctly. And, you're not going to know the influence of your career, Kevin, for years. You may never know the impact of yours because of that Google video. So, there are people out there who you've made their life better, maybe physically, and maybe they're a better athlete, and maybe they're on scholarship now, or their coach watch it. So it's all about making a difference and changing lives. And I really mean what I just said.
Yeah, it resonates quite a bit with, you know, I'm fortunate enough to work at Mike Boyle's facility, and that's one of the things, you know, every 6 months he brings that up to the staff, because, you know, sometimes when you're in there coaching all day and you're not sleeping and you're kind of getting run down, you forget those, you know, same 30 kids that you see in your couple groups throughout the day that, you know, you really are making a difference. And it's with anyone who's in the industry. If you're just, you know, have personal training clients, you help them lose 60 pounds and completely change their life and make it so they're not hurting anymore. And you add an extra 20 years to their life. It's you know, you can't put a price on it, really.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
This is one of those things where I'm a very nostalgic person, for better or worse. And it's shows how lucky I've been, very fortunate, you know, to have guys like you and like Mike, and to kind of have as mentors, and make sure I turn out right, and make sure I do the right thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, good. Now, okay. Wonderful people. Let's move along now and get to, should I eat breakfast or not, or whatever the question is. Okay.
Well, we got a lot of stuff from the listeners, and again, I have kind of my own. I usually come with a couple things that I would like to talk about as well, but I think Brian on Facebook had a great place to start out, and one of the things that always seems to be a big thing in terms of, you know, when people always want to become successful, whether it's, you know, financially or, you know, physically, socially, the big thing they talk about is, you know, personal development and goals and things like that. And he just, you know, simply said, you know, could you ask Dan some questions on personal development and the role it plays in becoming a better coach? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, well, you know, I think I'm blessed in a way, because I lucked out. I was at a used bookstore years ago. In fact, it's interesting because I gave this book to my son-in-law, Andrew. And it was a dollar book, Earl Nightingale's book, Lead the Field. And I started reading it, and from reading that, I bought his audio tapes. This might be something wrong. Yeah. I later bought the CDs, and I have the transcripts. It was called Lead the Field, and it was a series of 12 little lessons, all on attitude and on goal setting and on cost-to-benefit ratios. I mean, all the stuff I use today. Of course, you know, I've read Anthony Robbins' work. I have great respect for him. I know a lot of people will tweak him and make fun of him, but I have great respect for his work. And I can remember back when I got back from the Middle East, when I was so ill. I was down. I lost 40 pounds in 2 weeks, and there really was a few hours where my survival, I wasn't going to die, but it was tenuous. When I got back from there, I would go down to the local library, and I'd walk down there, because that's really all I could do about the time. And I had this kind of like backpack, and I had a battery-powered tape recorder, and I would get these books on tape. And I would try to get three at a time. One would be like, a book on tape. One would be motivational stuff, and the other one usually would be like a poetry thing, because I was trying to re-knit myself. Mm-hmm. And what I began to do is, the more I listened to these motivational speakers, and they're not – I hate to use the word motivational. It's a bad term. Self-empowerment, whatever you want to say, bring yourself up by your bootstraps speakers. Well, I really began to take like things like goal setting and things like that seriously. And what I began to notice – is when I started writing down goal, and I started writing down an intelligent path to the goal, I would always get my goal. You know, I was in debt. I think it's so funny to even say this now, because this is a liquor bar tab for me now. But I started all, and I wrote down this little plan of getting rid of the debt, and I swear, 6 weeks later, it was gone. My plan was 3 months. I halved it. And so, this is why I love this question. I saw it too. I think a lot of people don't realize that I spend as much time with pad and paper as I do in the weight room. I spend as much time you know, kind of setting things up and thinking things through. I've got two whiteboards in my gym here. And the whiteboards, you've got to be careful when you look at them because it's my brain throwing up. And you can get injured if you look too closely, you know. And I've learned that, you know, the old Chinese saying that the cheapest is better than the strongest mind. And I've noticed that's very true in my life. So this idea on personal development, that was a good question. If you're kind of cheap, and many of the people who listen on the internet are, Tony Robbins has got this book. It's his Thanksgiving book, and it summarizes all of his works, and it's a paperback. I think it's like $3.95. That's a good place. Of course, the library is a good place to start, too, like I did. But I firmly believe in this. Now, my hero was Earl Nightingale, so he's my weakness, okay? Earl Nightingale is one of the few Marines survived the Arizona during the Pearl Harbor attack.
Mm-hmm.
This grappling voice, you know, and it was just great. This is Earl Nightingale reminding you that, and he'd go on. And Earl Nightingale was great for me. He touched what I needed. There's many others. The great pole vaulter Bob Richards has some. Zig Ziglar, and there's of course for now. Here's the funny thing: most of them set themselves up for business. You know, to become a more successful salesman, for example. I use their information to become a better athlete. And when I use those same tools to become a better coach, I became a better coach. When I use those same tools as a businessman, you know, it's funny, Kevin, Kevin, you know what to do with me, right? You just let me talk. You let me roll, right? Okay. All gatherings, and someone will offer me business advice. It's like, Dan, you really need to do X, Y, and Z. And I'll nod and we'll talk. And I'm like, that's a really good idea. Like, for example, I don't have business cards, you know? And people give me business cards. Well, do you have one? I'd be like, oh, no, man, I don't have a business card. Oh, yeah, well, how do you get people to know who you are? Well, isn't that funny? Because you walked over, introduced yourself to me, and gave me your business card, and then you see my point?
Mm-hmm.
My whole career has been based on this idea that as I develop – now, by the way, I have a spiritual side too, so I got, you know, so I always balance that too. But as one develops themselves with the personal development side of things – that they grow as an athlete, they grow as a coach, they grow as a businessman. And you know what's funny? I think you grow as a father. I think you grow as a mother. I think you grow as a teacher. I think you grow as a community member. The same things, it's funny, I've got this workshop, part of my workshop is on what I call managing options versus managing compromises. And one of the things, or managing choice is probably a better word, but they're interchangeable. And my idea as a parent is you can't compromise. There's just too many decisions, and I learned this from being a school teacher. It has been said that a school teacher makes 10,000 decisions a day. When a bunch of students walk into the room and you see them, you are looking to whether or not what part of the uniform code you're going to enforce. When the bell rings, you're going to make decisions on whether they're seated or walking, you know, all these decisions, you know. Well, as a parent, you could have 10,000 decisions in an hour. You don't have any more emotional energy to make more compromises. Because let me tell you this, if you got five kids and you guys and say, what do you want for dinner? By definition, every kid will want something radically different. you know, that Mediterranean chicken, that meal I make with the salad. Oh. Okay, options. So that is something I've come up with in my business career. So I use that in my business career too. You notice that I tend to stay in certain areas. I try not to get too distracted. I've got great respect for you guys in mobility and great respect for you guys. I always joke that I don't know what a femur is because I think that's dispensing medical advice. If I see my athlete gets hurt and I see a white thing sticking out of their thigh with blood running off of it, I don't diagnose it. I call 911, get the kid calmed down as best we can, and, you know, come up with plan B for the day, right? So my vision of things, my vision of personal development has been of managing options, managing choices. of all the things I've been talking about, of having, for example, you'll notice a lot of time I keep things in groups of three. I have a 10-question toolbox I use the first time I meet you as one of my clients or athletes. I have five principles. You'll notice that a lot of my stuff is etched out there, okay? Where do I get all this stuff? Because of the personal development background. If you want to have a good business, you have to have core values. You have to know what your mission is. I mean, what's your mission as a coach? You know, I tell you, when a kid shows up to me as a freshman, I tell him, if you follow me, you'll be state champion as a senior. So if you're following my point here, the personal development stuff I did in my career, Zig Ziglar, Anthony Robbins, Earl Nightingale, and on and on and on. There's a lot of people. Dennis Whitney, that whole group, Irving Dardick, even though a lot of people don't like his work, really established me to set up, I'm going to use the word here, a system for success that should be interchangeable between your life as a dad for me, your life as a husband for me, your life as a community member, and your life in the trenches in the weight room. Okay.
I guess my follow-up to that would be is that a lot of people, you know, they can sometimes start with the goal setting and then they tend to not do a very good job, you know, writing down their goals or making them, you know, for a lack of a better word, realistic or something that is approachable for them. How do you, you know, what advice would you have for people who just, you know, they sometimes write down those goals, but then 2 days later it's, you know, on to something else?
The entire $5,000 workshop. Okay, I get it. It comes down to this for me. One of the things I ask all the time is goal setting simply is, I am here, I want to go to there. In other words, I'm at point A, I want to go to point B. Elite athletes always know what their point B is. Always. They always know. I want to play 3 more years in the NFL. I want to be at make the Olympic team. I want to be at the Olympic trials. I want to make the nationals. I want to be state champ. They always know. What they don't know is point A. The example I always use, it was when I was in the ninth grade, I was, I'm not bragging here, this is true, drug free. I was 118 pounder. And I'm not bragging, but I could incline bench 85 pounds. Again, anabolic free, no drugs. Okay. And I read an article about Gary Ordway, a very elite American discus thrower, who could incline bench press 385 pounds. And it was great for me because I knew that the path from where I was, my point A was an 85-pound incline bench press. My point B, in at least in that lift, was a 385-pound incline bench press. Now, you could say, now the problem with most people is that they throw in a point Z. It is true that that was my point Z. But I knew that to get from 85 to 385, I was going to have to incline bench press 100 pounds. That became my first real goal. And I got it. I could look it up in my journal, but I think I got it June 1st, 1972. I think that's the day I did it. I then knew from then I'd have to get a 200, and then I'd have to get 300, and that's the rest. When a woman comes to me for advice, they know their point A. In fact, I quote this all the time in my workshop because a woman told me this. I'm fat and my husband won't touch me. Well, for God's sakes, I don't necessarily – do I need to do a body fat measurement of her? Do I need to put her against a wall and take pictures of her? No, God, no. But the problem is she'll show you a picture of Kim Kardashian or Demi Moore. That's her goal. She wants to look like Demi Moore in striptease. You know, I heard for striptease she had $150,000 of plastic surgery. So that's a point Z. So I take the great advice of Josh Hillis when working with clients is that, you know, you have them take a food journal with no, you're not judging, and then you come in the next week, and it does help to have a fellow client, another athlete, go through their food journal and circle the cheat meals. And it's not uncommon for a person to have 23 cheat meals in a week if they actually keep their food log at first. I hope you heard what I just said there.
I did, 23. I'm keeping myself on mute so that the guy outside is cutting his grass, so I want to make sure that doesn't pick up. Sorry.
Point is 23 cheat meals. So what Josh does is genius. Instead of telling him I want you to have 5 cheat meals next week, he says, can you get to 21 cheat meals? Wow, you walk in the next week proud as punch. You slap that food log on, and you only have 15 cheat meals. You know, only about two every day. But you know what? You made progress. There's your point B. The key, I think, Kevin, with most people is that most people know exactly where they are. They're at point A, and they want to leap all the way to that point Z. Our job is to rein them in. And say, wait, let's walk. You know, Psalm 23. Let's walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It's not sprint through it. So let's not sprint ourselves to point Z. It took you a while to get to where you are today. Give me a few days to unpack all that package. And so to follow your follow-up, I spend a lot of time on realistic week-to-week kind of things. I was with one of my discus throwers yesterday, and I said, you know, how often have you been throwing? She goes, Coach, I haven't been throwing enough. I threw Sunday, and I threw this week, Sunday and Wednesdays. Well, you know, it's funny, Kevin. I only want her throwing the discus this time of year twice a week. So she felt terrible about telling me she was doing exactly what I wanted. But what was nice is when you have an elite athlete, she's an elite athlete. She knows what her point B is, clearly. She wants to be state champion, okay? She doesn't yet understand where her assessment, her point A is. This time of year, right now, 2 days a week is all you need as a discus thrower. You should be spending the bulk of your time getting stronger in the weight room. That'll switch in the springtime. Elite athletes know where their point B is. Most of us, 99.9999999% of Americans, know exactly where they are. They know their point A. They don't have a viable point B. So when you talk about goal setting, most people write down that they want to look like Demi Moore or Arnold Schwarzenegger or the guys in 300. The guys in 300 look like that for like 1 week, okay? Arnold looked like that in South Africa for like 1 or 2 days at best. You know, what you want to get yourself on a goal. You want to march yourself into an intelligent goal. And finally, to answer all the questions, success leaves tracks. So for most of your clients, and I'm lucky, I mean, I've been coaching long enough that I'm kind of like my mentor, Dick Notmar. I can say things like, hey, you know, I knew a kid like you. I mean, I've got enough stories in my pocket that when I got a freshman boy who shows up at 118 pounds who wants to be a discus thrower, I can tell him about little Danny John at that age. So one of the things you have to do as a coach to help people with their goal setting is they have to hear the story, the success leaves tracks kind of thing. Okay, I got a friend named Dave who lost 100 pounds of fat in a year, which is very impressive. And he did it. I can't believe how he did it. It still just shocks me. The first month, all he decided to do was to drink, and I believe it was just a quart of water a day extra. That's all he did for a month. Well, what he did is he had absolute success with that simple goal. He told me a couple times he'd blown the goal off till 10 o'clock at night, drank the whole quart, and of course had to wake up in the middle of the night and pee. But it was a good reminder that tomorrow, we're not going to be that stupid, okay? We're going to do things a little bit more logical. So When you have a guy like Dave in your life, you can say, listen, I know a guy lost 100 pounds of body fat in a year. And if a client needs to lose 100 pounds of body fat, really, what did he do? Well, month one, he drank water. What else did he do? Well, he ate every other meal, didn't change anything. But about 3 months later, when he decided he would exercise every day, and the exercise was go for a walk, he had so much momentum that it was easy to go for a walk every day. And that's the biggest thing you can do for your clients, I think, is find stories of success. And what you're going to find is that most people who are successful in fat loss or in sports, what they did is it was, okay, there's a great book, The Brothers Karamazov. A woman comes to Father Zosima and says, Father, I've lost my faith. And he famously leans in and says, how did you lose it? And she says, bit by bit. And he goes, okay. And she goes, I want my faith back. What should I do? And he says, you'll get it back bit by bit. It's the best advice I can give. for anybody on their road to goals, but nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear that it took me 25 years to get 100 pounds overweight. It might give me 1 year to get it off of you. Okay? And that's, we can move on to our next question now.
That's perfect. One of the things that I wanted to hit on is that you did have a nice article series on T-Nation a couple months back where you're talking about 40 lessons. And one of the, you know, a couple of the lessons that really stood out to me in terms of programming and when it comes to strength and conditioning, the first one was really lesson 29, which was recharge. And, you know, it was kind of interesting because I know some people have kind of played around with, you know, lifting every day of the week. Do you lift, you know, 3 days a week? Do you lift 4 days a week? Is it full body? You know, a lot of people have kind of, you know, referenced your article in the past about doing one lift a day. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that lesson of recharge and, you know, kind of really what you saw from implementing some lighter, you know, natural movement patterns in on what would, I guess, would that those have been your off days?
Oh, okay. Okay. Let's separate the two words out quickly. Okay.
Okay.
Guys like me, it's been said, and I disagree, but, if there's a thing called a type A personality or an alpha male or things like that, sometimes people say that I have those qualities. Not true. When they say it, I beat the living hell out of them. Okay. I struggle with LIGHT, light days. I know I need to do them, but it's really hard for me to do them. So rest is a huge topic. I wrote an article for T-Nation years ago about it. You know, there's eternal rest, which all of us are heading towards, is when you die. You're going to have the rest. The moment you die, it's all rest periods after that. So somewhere between zero and death is – that's why talking about rest periods are such a hard time. I think taking vacations are really an important thing for an athlete and a fat loss client. It's funny. I've had people who've been losing – I'm trying to lose some body fat. Oh, my God, I went on a cruise. And they come home and they weigh less than when they went on the cruise. You know why? Because the first time in 6 months they've slept 8 hours. They lay around in a pool of suntanning. They're active, and they probably make better food choices because they're better rested. So sometimes vacations is the best thing you can possibly do. And then, of course, you can slide that down into off days, which I think everybody should have a couple a week. And then, of course, then from there, rest periods in between sets and reps and things. And you know what I'm talking about. And that, to me, the answer is always, it depends. I mean, really, it depends. How long do you rest after a set of, if you back squat 405 for 50 reps deep, how long do you rest before you repeat that? What would you say, Kevin? I'd say the research says 5 minutes. Okay, go back squat 405 for 50. Again for me, okay? Because I'm just, you know, I just would like to see, I just like to see the rest period on that. Okay, that's rest. Refresh is something a little different. Refresh is the term I use now for light days. And the idea of a refresh workout is, I'd like you to do the basic human movement. So that would be push, pull, hinge, squat, maybe even a loaded carry. That can be anything. It'd be nice to do a Turkish get up or some rolling. It would be nice to foam roll those areas that you think you need to foam roll. That hip flexor stretch that you know you need to do, you do it. My refresh day now is I have this Panama Jack Cruiser. It's about a 90-pound bicycle. It's got a bottle opener on the front hood, on the front fork. So basically the bike is a bottle opener with a bike attached. And it goes really slow. It's really heavy. It's funny, Books on Tape. I'm listening to the 100 greatest classics right now in literature. And I go for a bike ride and I get back and I do a few goblet squats. I invent a few things for pressing, you know, for the workout the next day when the guys come over. I saw this weird thing on YouTube, so I try it out and I realize it's just idiocy. For me, a refresh workout is how many reps of this or that do I do? Very, very few. It doesn't matter. I'm just in for the grin, so to speak. Okay. I lube my joints up a little bit. I feel better. I might do some stretching with the TRX. If it takes me 5 minutes, it takes me 5 minutes. It takes me an hour, it takes me an hour. I don't time it and I don't judge it. And for me, that's a much better way to look at it, because the next day when I come in to train, that refresh is kind of prime the pump, as we used to say about wells. You know, that refresh is kind of, you know, lubed up the joints. It's gotten that, it's kind of put a little bit of oxygen in the gasoline. So that's how I look at this thing called refresh. But make sure you see, so there's three terms you're going to have to make sure you have. Well, maybe four, I guess. There's training session. A training session is when I go into the gym and I'm actually working on those things that's going to allow me to get the goal that I have. That would be, if I was going for a weightlifting meet, it'd be the snatch and clean and jerk, okay? That would be a training session. A refresh workout might be the thing I do the day before, where I go in, I do my goblet squats, I do some swings, I stretch my body out a little bit to prep myself for that snatch and clean and jerk workout the next day. A rest day, we'll just stick with days here. I don't want to go too deep into this. A rest day is when I take the day off and don't go into the gym at all. And maybe my only workout of the day is getting up and to go get dinner. There'd be a fourth term, and I don't like this one. That'd be a workout, and that's when I try to work myself out. Sometimes I think you need to kind of push yourself. I don't think it should be as often as some people think nowadays. These 5 day a week, I'm gonna leave it all on the ground. What you'll notice, if those people who go with those massive, heart blasting workouts, you'll notice that they don't. It's funny. The joke I always make is that they're all trying to look like 14-year-old boys. The women who do that look like 14-year-old boys. The men that do that look like 14-year-old boys. I was in the airport the other day, and I get off a plane, and this guy walks over to me and he shakes my hand. I didn't know who he was, but he had a certain gym's on his cover. And it's like, he was completely covered in gym clothes. You would never even know he lifted weights, you know? And I think that's the issue. When you work out too hard, you literally just work yourself out of the game. So I hope that answers your question well, Kevin, about refresh. Make sure you keep it where it should be in your training. And I do like the training cycle I just told you. I like a rest day, a refresh day, a training session, a rest day, a refresh day, a training session. You can stick on that a long time. Now on paper, it looks like you're working out 4 days a week, and you sort with you're in the gym 4 days, and you sort of are. But those refresh days are the days that's where you get your correctives in, and that's where you get your repair work. And honestly, that's also where your body figures out gently what a deep squat, for example, should look like. Mm. Okay?
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Another thing I wanted to – and then we'll jump back to some of the questions from the listeners, but I'm going to be a little selfish. One of the things that I've been kind of pondering, and I would love to get your take on it, is – the idea of always kind of like returning to center on certain methodologies or ideas in terms of training and things like that. And it kind of happens, you know, in my own training and things that I do with my clients where, you know, sometimes I kind of try out some, you know, like you said, like sometimes, you know, you see something new, you see a new trend in the industry that you think that might be applicable, and you might see some benefits from your athletes or from your clients using that, you know, technique. But then you always come back to this sort of center of exercises or ideas. I was wondering if you have any of those that you always kind of come back to. Like sometimes you stray from a couple ideas, but then you come back to them, you know, a couple weeks down the road and said, oh, wait, this was already working. Why did I go do this other thing?
Sure. What answer do you want? Do you want my answer as with a degree in theology or a degree in political science?
I love them both.
Okay, I'll give you both real quick. You know, a couple of years ago, there was this debate that my students watched between a pro-life person and a pro-choice. And when we unpacked it later on, both agreed that the extremes were driving them crazy in this discussion. In Genesis, there's this there's this division, there's this split. In fact, it's funny because the Greeks argue the same thing. And there's always this, you know, there's day, night, night, day, black, white. There's yes, no, male, female. And yet we're always, male, female, we're always trying to come back and join again, if you know what I'm saying. The two become one. I mean, that's what marriage is. And one of the things that's really helped me, I think, in my career, and I'm answering your question, Kevin, but remember, this is how I do. So I do things, is that most of us, every so often, will enjoy the radical ends, the 1%, right? We love that one, the 1% on both sides. You know, think of how many TV shows now on the History Channel. You know, there's a Gangland show. There's a show called Sons of Anarchy. And they always carry those little things that say 1%ers, you know, where there's this fascination with the 1% on the extreme. But there's also a fascination 1% on the other extreme. You know, I'm a Catholic here in Utah, and people always ask me questions about the monks. Well, the monks, well, I'm not a monk. I'm training to be a monk, but there's a few issues. That vow of silence is an issue, and that whole giving up, I think it's called celery, or is it celibacy? I can never keep it straight. Keep it straight. Okay, that's funny too. So by nature, I think it might be an American problem, but there's always this 1% on both sides in every issue, everything we talk about, and it's this urge to separate either or. So you see this new shiny toy in the fitness industry, and it's like, oh, I have got to do that. I have got to leave sweat marks on my gym floor, take a picture of it, and put it on the internet. I got to find the stupidest thing I can pop. Then 6 months later, you're at a Nautilus gym doing one set to relative failure on a machine. You're doing overhead presses with a seatbelt on because of safety issues. You're doing overhead presses seated with a seatbelt on because of this terrible fear you might fall. I don't know. And so what happens in our industry is that we fall in love those 1%. But there is no, you'll notice on those 1%, very often, you know, I had this wonderful conversation with Greg Glassman years ago. He did not agree in recovery methods with me. And I really struggled to understand it. And finally, I think we both got, it took us a while to unpack this. But my vision as a guy who coaches throwers mostly and football players, that recovery is a huge issue for someone who uses the weight room, the snatch, the clean and jerk, the front squat, and the bench press as a supplement to what they do for 3 or 4 hours a day, throw the discus, throw the hammer, throw the shot put, throw the javelin, or run into people. So for us, recovery tools are an issue because we're getting pounded no matter what we do. So you can be somebody who says, I don't believe in recovery tools at all. Well, if you have a Nautilus gym, I don't know if they even exist anymore, but you might. I mean, I remember the Nautilus gyms that I used to go to during my years of doing that. They'd always have sauna, steam room, and whirlpools. And I think it was to sell, because if I went in and did a Nautilus workout, but I was pretty advanced, I'd only do 8 machines, that workout would take about 12 minutes. Well, to make me feel good about my gym membership, I'd steam, sauna, and hang around the whirlpool to make it to an hour. You get my point? So I think what's happened in our fitness world is we love to go out on those fringe. We love the Hell's Angels on one end, and we love the nuns and monks on the other end. Most of us, though, are the radical 98% that are in the middle, which is really, this is my new sets of workshops. I tell people this all the time. What's the best thing strength training can do for you? Well, hypertrophy and joint mobility. What are the most important moves you do in the weight room? Well, the fundamental human movements. You know, push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carries, and, you know, all those other movements, which I call the sixth movement. Steve Ledbetter calls them 5+1. It's the same thing. They're all good idea. Tim Anderson, his bulletproof stuff. We need to get on our knees. We need to lay down on the ground. But it's push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry, okay? So the basic human movements are important. The third thing I always address with every person I talk to is, what are your gaps? So what most people ignore, you fall in love with this training program where you're going to just smash your face against the wall, you're going to leap through windows off of buildings, and great. But what you needed was that you've got that weird right shoulder, and you need to get a stronger rhomboid to hold it back in place. whatever your gaps are the problem. The fourth thing I always address with everybody is you can't go balls to the wall 365 days a year. You just can't do it. I know that you can't do it for a decade. I know you can't do it for a decade. So you need natural, easy workout, not easy, reasonable workouts and reasonable approaches to training and diet. And there are times you can ratchet it up. And the fifth principle I tell everybody about, this is answering your question about what's in the middle, is that you should really, really follow the advice of the ancients, and you should be as graceful and beautiful as you can. I learned that from Art Devaney. And at the same time, this I learned from an Esquire article, George Leonard article, it was the mid-80s. I fell in love with that article. I used to have my students read it, Mastery. You should strive for mastery, not just obsessions and not just dalliances, but mastery should, you know, we're coming up on our 25th wedding anniversary, my wife and I, and there have been times where it's not been perfect. And it's been pretty good, but it's not always what you see on movies and TV, you know. There's a great example of the opposite. I love this character named Don Draper. He's on a show called Mad Men. And the fourth season ends with him, you know, asking his 25-year-old hot secretary to marry him. And the girl he's dating at the same time, an older woman who's a psychologist, says, "You just love new things." And here's the thing. Most of us are dabblers, Kevin. Most of us are dabblers. We like shiny new toys. But to have mastery, it means you have to go out and constantly and consciously attack your gaps and your issues and try to make everything more beautiful. Kevin, I go out in my garage here. I've got it's just 50 kilos because that's all I had on this morning for this one thing I was doing this morning. But I'll go out. I've got an event to go to tonight. I'll go out before I get ready for this event. I'll do some extra. I'll probably just use 50 kilos and practice my squat snatch technique, because there's been, since I've had some surgeries, and my squat snatch technique isn't coming around. So I will sit there, a man who at one time snatched 142.5 kilos. I've attempted 150, and if I knew technically what I used to know, so that's 314 pounds and 330. I'll be training today with 110 pounds. Because mastery demands falling in love with the plateaus. Mastery demands putting your ego in your back pocket and practicing things slow and easy. And I think what's happened in our field, Kevin, is that we fall in love with the new sport, the new game, the new toy, and we don't want to spend time on that relationship with what brought you here in the first place. And I think people need to remind themselves, what brought you into the weight room the first time? I can tell you my story. I can tell you in seconds my story. I can tell you every inch. I'm writing a thing now about, well, I won't bore you too much, but I've already bored you with everything else. But the idea is that we need to get ourselves back into this radical middle where simple things, simple truths are in the middle here, that aren't very sexy. They're not very, I'm not going to make $1 million, man, telling people they need to do the basics, but it's true and it's correct. And I gave you my five principles right there. If you were listening closely.
That was outstanding. And again, I think it's something that I kind of see in our athletes and things like that. They just get so much out of doing the basics. And I, you know, sometimes wonder how much they're really getting out of the extra. Maybe that's just to be safe and to cover our bases. But the things that we just get from the basic movement patterns. And this is one of the next questions that we have from a listener that I kind of want to follow up on, because I've heard internet rumors that you like overhead pressing. There's rumors on various forums, on the T-Nation forums and other places. This is my kind of way of being funny. It's, you know, it works sometimes. But the great question from Ben, he said, "I would love to hear Danjon talk about the barbell overhead press. I lift, doing the big four, squat, dead, bench, overhead, all with the barbell. I'm 2.5 years into my lifting and feel good with all four, but the overhead is definitely the one I'm least comfortable with. The squat, dead, and bench have so many articles and videos covering them online, but it seems the overhead is not covered by many people in depth. Do you have any tips or suggestions for becoming more proficient with the overhead press?
Yeah. Pressure stress. Next question. Yeah. He's got the press, you know? Mm. Sounds funny. That's one. Okay. In a little bit of serious. Really not much. You're not going to get much more than that. I do think the single kettlebell press is very good. What it does teach you is it teaches to have a belt line parallel to the ground, teaches you to keep your butt cheeks tight. It teaches you that correct pressing is a whole body movement. And that's something a lot of people, I think, miss. Okay? And but really, it's a lot simpler than I think we make it out to be, Kevin. I learned to press in my backyard with a Sears Ted Williams bar, and we military pressed 3 days a week to see who could military press the most. And that's, I think you need to, he's doing the 5-3-1 program. He might need a military press every workout as a supplement, maybe not heavy. There's the bigger but boring program that Jim has, where you do 5 sets of 10. That might be very helpful for me, for him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's a hard one to answer without me standing there going, "Oh, you got to get your elbows underneath." Your elbows should be underneath your wrists. Most people I see pressing have far too light light. I'm sorry. Their grip is too narrow. Most people need to widen them out so that your elbows track underneath your wrists. Those are some basics, but really tightening that butt cheek and staying locked and loaded is the key.
Yeah, that's great stuff. The another topic that people wanted us to hit on, and you kind of alluded to it a couple minutes ago, and that was, you said you've been getting some work done and you're kind of recovering. This is a great question from Tom. I wanted to ask him to describe his rehab from hip replacement. I had a total replacement last year. Rehab was harder than any training program I've done in years. I was interested in his thoughts on the benefits of strength training to a rehab after joint replacement for us over 50-year-olds.
Yeah, first off, I mean, there's a couple of questions that talk about this. One of the things that people miss is that it's either my injury was genetic or really I blew my hip off competing. I had a condition called necrotic hip. I had killed the upper part of the femur and the part of the joint. I put it off so long I began to endanger my own health. There was an article this week from the AARP about how the injury I had quadruples mortality in a year. So I didn't take it seriously enough. I thought that with my own knowledge of strength and athletics, I could cure myself. Physician, heal thyself. But more importantly, any lawyer who represents himself has an idiot for a client. Any coach who coaches himself has an idiot for an athlete. So I need to make this clear, Kevin. I was stupid. I went into all kinds of – I tried all kinds of non-medical intervention ideas. I did all kinds of things. I tried every supplement the world has. I tried every kind of voodoo and haiku you can use. And I should have had that thing replaced 3 years ago. I was endangering. On my daughter's 21st birthday, we went to drink around the world at Epcot. My father-in-law said he was so worried about the way I was walking, it was hard for him to get drunk. So it was a rough, I hurt other people by not taking care of this. So my warning to you all is this. I am not, Kevin, are you a doctor?
In the state of Massachusetts, I'm not licensed, no.
Nor am I. So if you get injured bad enough and you need x-rays, go to a medical doctor. Go get a surgeon. Don't sit around the gym and ask people what the problem is. I had to say that. Now, what I did to rehab, and there's pictures, I was driving my beloved wife insane, so she brought me a kettlebell, and I started doing pressing 2 days, seated presses 2 days out of surgery. And then I started doing pull-ups at the Park Road Fitness every opportunity I could. For me, one other thing I did too is once I started walking, I loved walking again. Walking was such a blessing. And to answer this person's answers, what I did was what I always do after surgeries. Famously, years ago, I blew my left wrist apart. And Dr. Vanderhoof famously said to me, he's never seen recovery like this. And I said, well, he goes, what are you doing? I go, first off, I'm doing the exercises you showed me, but I was also doing one-arm front squats. So I'd stick that one arm straight out, you know, and I was doing tons of one-arm presses. The body is one piece, so every time I lifted weights, I was throwing all kinds of that nutrition, you know, all those wonderful things that you get from lifting into that joint. So one of the things I think this person should do is make sure take a bodybuilding approach to your upper body. You are now I went in and started doing incline bench presses again, all kinds of rows. I did curls and tricep extensions, and I worked my good leg as much as I could. Anybody who's had a hip replacement knows there's a few weeks it's hard to do anything with either leg. But I started to kind of build my upper body. And the nice thing is, of course, it also does great things to your mind. I was only on Oxycontin for the first 12 hours after surgery because I didn't like the way I felt. And so I tried to – and I couldn't drink alcohol. So I was only on a very light painkiller. But, you know, it's – but the nice thing about that was the other painkiller I was using was weightlifting. You know, you get in there and you start pushing the iron a little bit, stuff starts washing through and you start feeling pretty good about yourself again. And, you know, you look better too. So that's where I was until I was cleared in January to start moving to do some movements. And I did a training program called Kettlebell Fever. I did it. I mean, there were some hard days. One day is 315 goblet squats and 315 hinge movements, and that's a lot. But I did a lot of naked swing, call them naked swings. It's kind of like a you stand up tall and then you kind of just go into the hinge position, then you stand up tall. And I know people are probably listening, what is this guy talking about? But listen, after total hip replacement, that's a workout in itself. And then I started grooving the hip back with goblet squats, hinge movements. The hinge movements are like swing-like movements. And then exactly 1 year to the day after 1 year to the day after surgery, which was the agreement I had with the doctor, I went into the weight room and I got a barbell and I started lifting with the barbell again. And in those few weeks, I have made the best progress of the whole recovery once I started snatching and clean and jerking again. Clean and jerk isn't so true. I do squat snatch and I do squat cleans. The jerk is still there. My upper body, I might have made some progress with my upper body. Not one thing I said was medical intervention, but I do want you to make sure you heard my little warning, is that we've got to get in this field away from all the voodoo and I am a strength coach. I am not a medical interventionist. Now, I know first aid. I am very good in bad situations. If you were to ever be attacked by a shark, I'm one of the people you want around. I'm a good swimmer. But I'm not a doctor. I can get you to shore. I can tie you down. I call 911, and then I go out and take it out on the shark. I'm not a doctor, and and this is a message I'm trying to really pour into the community. I think the more we talk about, and you go online for an hour, and I mean mobility exercises that cure cancer, and I'm not joking. You know, gosh, you know, if you take a Bikram yoga class, I'll talk about how, and I love Bikram yoga, but the wind removing pose supposedly, you know, highlights this and that, and this makes the pituitary gland work better. Really? It makes the what to what? So that there you go. I hope I answered the question, Kevin.
Great stuff as always. And we're as we kind of come into the 1 hour mark, believe it or not, we've been talking for an hour. I always like to ask, because I think people out there, you can definitely listen to the interview, but it's always great to kind of see you in person and to kind of see how one of the coolest things that you ever did is you came to our facility at Mike Boyle's and you just kind of pulled out a whiteboard and just started going. And I think that's one of the things that people can really get a lot out of. So are you going to be presenting anywhere? Are you going to be at any seminars or anything that's coming up in the near future?
Yeah. I mean, I get canceled more than anybody I know. But this weekend I'll be out in California at Josh Vert's place. And what's nice about this, Kevin, is that we are filming my next DVD there.
Awesome.
Yeah. So my book, Intervention, will be out November 15th. And so I'm not saying I'm wrapping up Intervention because I still think it's the best thing I do. But I just personally need to move on. You know, once you've given a workshop 30, 40, 50 times, it's like, okay, there's other things I want to tell people. And this next workshop is about, well, the working title of the next book is The Coach's Book of Coaching. But it's about, you know, coaching and using a systems approach to coaching. Which gets us right back, you know, Kevin, it really drives us back to some of the questions you've asked. You know, everyone thinks I'm like this loosey-goosey, let's have a hug guy. But I am, and you can ask my athletes, once they see that I train everybody in a system, they don't notice it at first. It's not until they go see other schools, other teams train, that they realize that what a system approach I have to things. I mean, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 1, 2, 3. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's, okay, these are the six. This is the time of year. That, blah, blah. Everything is a system, you know, and it works well. I have some events no one's allowed to go to. Wow, I've got a quiet month. And this thing, another thing just got canceled. In November, I'm doing a hardstyle kettlebell with Jim Hooper. And then it's not until I do Grumpy Old Men in January. But I do a couple of workshops. Oh, in Chicago in February. But it's really slowed down for me, Kevin. What I did was I raised my rates, and I'll be honest with you. I've gotten screwed over on a number of recent things where people have asked me and promised me a lot, and then, you know, it's not there. And it's really hard for me to do all the stuff that people, you know, to fly cross country on my own tab and then, you know, get $200. It doesn't even pay for the bar tab, you know, it doesn't even pay for. So it's going to be, but I'm most excited about my book and my new DVD coming out. And I'm starting to think that maybe that's where I'm going to have to live for a while. I love coming out your way, but the guy who I was coming out, I was going to do a workshop in Boston. He canceled on me yesterday for a workshop in November. So that's too bad.
That's called, I don't know if you want to be nice and call it poor planning or kind of being an ass to people. But I hate traveling anyway, so it's not easy.
With me, Kevin, it's, you know, I think I really want to give back to the community. The problem is that a lot of people who want me to bring me, they're kind of not there yet on. I mean, I work with some people. I do work with the best and brightest. You know that, right? But those are all closed events. And once you get treated that way, you know, when you fly first class, when you stay at the top end of the top end hotel, when you get into your room and there's a gift basket for you with enough wine and fruit to keep you alive for, you know, years, you know, and there's, you know, there's one. And most people know who I'm talking about, does a lot of Orlando stuff. When I do a workshop there, they buy 300 copies of every one of my books so that everybody can have copies of my books. Well, for gosh sakes. And then, of course, first class. And so what happens is, and then I get invited to a place that's, and they want to pay me $200, but I have to pay my own flight. I'm not a jerk, Kevin. I'm just saying – that I'm in this weird place in my career where I'm not spending any weekends with my family, any. And you know, I was it's funny because my pastor, he always Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday I go to Mass because he knows I'm on the road every weekend, you know. And so I'm trying to support the community. I'm still doing volunteer work here in the area. I've learned recently that I'm the most politically incorrect person. I go to an old folks' home to help out, you know, and it's called a senior center. Okay. It's like, dude, you just told a volunteer to, you know, okay, I won't word in there, but you just told a volunteer to what?
Well, I think, you know, that's the cool thing that we can do in 2012 is that you can have, like, the DVDs and you can have the books and stuff like that. And, you know, it's not for, you know, less than people spend on coffee a week. They can, you know, get a six-hour seminar with you, you know, on a DVD. And, you know, I think that's just one of the best things that we can do is the digital age is just get stuff out to people a little bit easier. And again, best place is DaveDraper.com the best place to get your stuff right now or your website?
Oh, you know what? The thing I like about if you go to Dave Draper, it's easier for Lurie to track.
Okay.
Well, Amazon is fine too, but you know, Amazon, they're very good to me, and I can't complain. But I don't know if you know how they treat their authors. They're a little less than loose, okay? But so, yeah. And the nice thing, if you go to Dave Draper, then you get to go to the forum where I'm on all the time, and Dave's on there too. But you know what? We didn't answer all the questions. How much are you hurting for time?
My dog's looking at me to eat dinner. If you have some time, we can keep going.
Do you want to just try to knock through some of those questions and by like five, we'll go quick answers for like 5 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go to the next question from Jamie. Another great question. I heard Gray Cook talk about how Dan finally decided to rehab his Achilles in pains rather than training around and through the pain and how that resulted in weight loss without any dietary changes. Gray related that to a decrease in cortisol. I was wondering if Dan had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's what my doctor told me, and I told Gray, yeah. Yeah, I have a real problem with belts now. It's funny because, you know, everyone said, God, you got so fat. It wasn't fat. I knew it was inflammation. I could tell. I could see it in my face. You know, these red streaks that you get. And I don't know if you've seen pictures of me lately, but everyone goes, God, you look so much better. And it's like, it's not better. I'm just not in pain. You know, morticians will tell you that people look so much better dead because they're not in pain anymore. Mm. Actually, when someone dies, very often, you'll say, my God, they're resting in peace. Yeah, pain, man. The kind of pain I was in with my hip was blinding. Blinding pain. My friends said they would get sick to their stomach when I would do certain things. Dude, you can't live a life like that. Let me teach you. Now it's true. I mean, I take fish oil now still, and that does massively wonderful things for inflammation problems. But it is true. Cortisol is a problem. So how you can use this as a trainer, if you have clients who are in pain, if you can stretch them out to get them out of pain, if you can get some body fat off them to get them out of pain, that's great. But if pain needs medical intervention, you can become a better trainer by getting the medical intervention, and then we work around it. So the question is right and wrong. Working around it after medical intervention seems to be the answer.
Yeah, that's super cool stuff. And again, it's one of those things that people need to keep in mind. Were you looking at some of the questions on Facebook or on the email?
I'm on Facebook, but it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
All right, I am on that email. So let me.
I'll shift over. That's not a problem.
Okay, let me take a look at see what else we got on Facebook. Yeah, we got tons of feedback on this stuff. So we Here's a good question from Dave. Where do you draw the line between giving the athlete responsibility slash versus babying them? Are coaches becoming paranoid about exposing athletes to any form of risk in the weight room?
Yeah, well, okay. Obviously, this is that's another long topic. Yeah. Really, it comes down to this. You know, if you have what I call quadrant one athlete, you know, under 18 youth, you know, mm-hmm. you need to. I mean, expose them to risk, then you're a shitty strength coach. You know, you shouldn't be hurting kids in the weight room. I mean, I certainly have, and I regret it. It's the biggest mistakes in my career. It really has changed. Injuring young kids has changed. And please, when I say injure, it can be very marginal things. But your job is to be teaching all the movements you can, all the tools you can, and all the games of sports you can. So that's what quadrant one. So, you know, if you have a quadrant two athlete, you know, this NFL player, you know, they're getting beat up enough. And the offseason will push it. Most people are what I call quadrant three, and that is a person who's what. If you improve your strength or you improve your technique, you get better. If you improve your strength or you lock down your diet better, you look better. For those guys, really, I look at that as a long haul. I see a discus, you know, I see an 8-year program for a discus thrower. And then, of course, if you're quadrant four, it's a sprinter or an Olympic lifter or deadlifter, you've got to push the envelope. You just have to. I like that question. You know, I like that question. My only concern was, let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. Hurting your athletes, wrong. Challenge your athletes, right. So the problem is going to happen maybe with some of us is that, you know, when does challenging become hurting, you know?
I find you kind of have to... You know, when you get a new athlete, you kind of have to gauge their personality, just wait a couple. Like when we get a new group, or if I get a new group of like 13-year-olds, I kind of go through a couple sessions with them to kind of see how I can interact with them, because you'll see some are shy or some are, you know, more that, you know, alpha male where they just want to, you know, lift, they want to bench every time they come in and push sleds and things like that. You find you have to kind of observe them first before you, you know, choose which path to take with them.
Would you repeat that question again for me, that last part?
Yeah, I guess in terms of if you, you know, on the same topic, if you have a new athlete and or a new group of athletes where you have to kind of assess their personalities to see how you can push them or how you can interact with them to see, you know, if you can, you know, what part you have to be on besides, you know, not necessarily babying them, but taking it really easy with them, easing them into the program versus, you know, being a little bit more aggressive with them in terms of coaching them a little bit harder. Do you find you have to give a couple sessions to assess their personality before you can, you know, choose which path to take with that athlete?
This is my next DVD. I mean, okay, just kind of think about a yin yang. Mm-hmm. Assess and goals. It's not five workouts. You wait for five. You assess every minute, every day.
Yeah.
The goal side, okay. If it's just someone who shows up because you have a high school weightlifting class and they click the box and they're taking the class because of they click the box. Well, okay, their goal is to pass the class, so you have to assess them right there. You know, what can I get away with? Mm-hmm. We've got to be a national champion. You look at where they are and you lock those two together. So I would say this, you know, if you're a Harry Potter fan, constant vigilance. But if you're not, constant assessment. So assessment, you just a coach, any kind of coach, has to be a master of assessment. Mm-hmm. And never-ending assessment. Okay? Kana. That's good. Kana. Constant and never-ending assessment. Okay?
Very cool. We'll kind of run down the list here. You know, talking about the Highland Games, we didn't get into that too much. Andrew had a question in the absence of training for sport, perhaps it's more, you know, quote, training for sport. Are there any standalone Great Highland Games activities that someone could practice to improve his overall physique goal? And he says, let's call this kind of guy the look good naked type.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what my friend Steve always calls that, correlation and causation. Mm-hmm. Go to a Highland game, you see a bunch of big, strong guys throwing shit. So, ergo, if I throw the Highland game stuff, I'll be a big, strong guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing, maybe farmer walk. Walks might be the one. That might help, but, you know, yeah. It's, you know, I spent a lot of time under the bar, snatching, clean, and jerking before I could be good at the Highland Games. So, yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, tossing a caber is fraught with issues. I blew my hip apart doing it. So, you know, yeah. So there you go.
Well, question from Jim. Kind of, you know, relates to, you know, sometimes coming off of injuries, but can you ask Dan his ideas of how to approach a return to training after a shortish layoff of 3 to 4 months of very little resistance exercise? How to, like, ease back in?
Well, bottom for taking 3 to 4 months off. Mm-hmm. I strongly think that that's a great idea for most people. You know, in fact, I'm going to make a note of that right now because that's something I forget to talk about enough off work. Off diet. I just made a note of that. That's a very good principle. If you're a serious trainer, I mean, I've been training, you know, pretty much on since 1967 or 66, I think. Certainly since 1971, I don't think I've had very many unforced offs. And yet the interesting thing is when I am forced to make an off, either because I'm dying from something I pick up in the Middle East or getting hit in the head with a discus. I took a long time off after that. That was good. Surgeries. I always joke surgeries is God's way of saying slow down. Surgeries have provided me most. What's great about that is when he goes back in, he's way ahead of the rest of us. Taking 3 to 4 months off, letting all that neurological clutter to get out of the way, letting that, you know, everything kind of reset. Oh, it's a gift. I applaud you. Just go back in, do the basic human movements, you're fine. But man, I applaud you for taking time off.
Very cool. Well, I think that that's all the questions that I got from the Facebook and things like that. But as always, thank you so much for spending the time and talking. And again, I can't reiterate enough. People should really check out, you know, your DVDs and your books. I mean, Never Let Go is something that I think I've reread 3 times now, and kind of beat the crap out of the book by taking notes and folding pages over and stuff like that. So, you know, again, I just, you know, thank you for coming on the show, and I appreciate you helping us do this little mini celebration for 250 and. Again, that's all I got.
Always honored, Kevin. Let's stay in touch, and don't wait until you want to fit cast me. Email me anytime, I can help you. And the same to anybody listening. You know, as long as the questions aren't too idiotic, I'm always happy. And if you don't want to email me directly, just go to the DaveDraper.com forum and ask me a question there. And the nice thing about that forum is there's a lot of people I trust who post on it too. Mm-hmm. My perspective and a couple other people, you know, who are, you know, especially if you're going to ask the, like I heard today about, you know, recovery and stuff like that. It's always nice to listen to old warriors when it comes to some of this stuff. Listen, when I was 21, I was an idiot. You know, I was bulletproof. I could Olympic lift 5 days a week, throw the discus 4 hours a day, 7 days a week. I was bulletproof. I'm not like that at 55. Okay.
Fair enough. Again, thank you for taking the time. And everyone, don't forget to you know, head over to DaveDraper.com. And again, the cool thing that Dan mentioned, you can also check out his books on Amazon. So you can even get them on the Kindle if you're, you know, anti-paper, like some people are. And, you know, again, that's it. Check out the, you know, thefitcast.com. And again, thank you so much for joining me today.
And you're the best. I will talk to you soon, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Bye now.